I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Dead center of the work week. Thanks so much for joining us on The Hump Show. We're looking for your questions for Ask Amy Anything, so you can send those to our show Twitter, After Hours CBS, or on our Facebook page. Super easy to find. If you do a Google search, just Google it. We're inside the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. These are challenging times, and Rocket Mortgage is prepared to help. If you need mortgage assistance, please contact the team 24/7 at rocketmortgage.com. From their homes to yours, the team at Rocket Mortgage is with you. 855-212-4227. We've got the latest and potentially last proposal from the NBA. The Board of Governors will vote on Thursday. If you haven't heard, well, you'll have to catch my CBS Sports Minute. No, in addition, I am writing the minute. But 22 teams starting July 31st in Orlando, with a potential Game 7 of the NBA Finals not set until October 12th. After a four-month layoff, there's stress, there's pressure, there's the virus risk, there's this idea of being semi-sequestered in Orlando and really not able to go anywhere else. The whole idea is to limit travel so that there is a mitigated risk of the virus with all the health and safety protocols. Do you really want to be the player that leaves Orlando if you're not forced to stay there? Let's say you leave, you take a hiatus, maybe you have a couple days off. You go on a holiday. No, but you might go home to visit your family. Well, if you're the one who comes back with the virus and then puts your entire team at risk of losing in the playoffs, and by losing, I mean getting booted because you can't play with the virus, well, then that wouldn't sit well with your teammates, would it? So there's an extra layer of risk. There's an extra layer, of course, of pressure, because it's entirely different. And yet this is the format the NBA is expected to approve. It takes 3/4 of the team, 75% of the 30 teams, but they're expected to move forward with 22 returning, 8 done. So the 8 teams that would not return, I mean, that's tough, right? Because you've got 8 teams that are left out. But that includes the Golden State Warriors, worst record in the NBA, not within 6 games of the final playoff spot. In fact, they're not within 15 games of the final playoff spot in the West. In fact, they've only won 15 games all season. And Steve Kerr has said weeks ago they're operating as though the season was already over. No Warriors, no Timberwolves, no Cavaliers, no Hawks, no Pistons, no Knicks, no Bulls, no Hornets. So Michael Jordan's team, not within 6 games of the final playoff spot. Only one team in the East, that would be the Wizards. And then 5 teams in the West that are within 6 games and would be allowed to compete for a spot in the postseason. So presumably some type of a play-in tournament similar to what the NHL is using. So what do you think? It's After Hours on CBS Sports Radio. Now, in terms of the NFL, we have gotten some guidance and some insight as to what training camps will look like. So here's the weird part. I mean, gosh, what isn't weird about sports in 2020? Except for the Super Bowl. That was amazing. It was a long time ago, though, too. NFL teams cannot leave their main practice facilities for training camps. So, you know, there are some teams out there who go elsewhere. Let's see, Dallas Cowboys being a great example. They hold their training camp in California. in Oxnard because it's cooler there. And they also had some grass fields that are just easier on players than the turf. So the Cowboys have been in Oxnard going back, oh gosh, how many years? But they stay in California typically for about a month. That's not happening this year. Cowboys are actually supposed to be, along with the Steelers, the first two teams to report in late July because they're the ones scheduled for the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Now the NFL is saying every team must hold training camps at their own facilities and no joint practices. So trying to lessen the risk in some way. I just am so amazed by the NFL getting out in front of everything, but also the fact that they're just blessed by the gift of time. The union is on board, so these two decisions, not traveling for training camp, staying at your own facilities, which they're just now reopening in many cases, and also no joint practices. The union is on. I just hiccuped. I have no idea why. The union is on board with that. And so we're talking a one-time shot. According to Roger Goodell, these are for the 2020 preseason and not expected to carry over into next year. Last year, there were 10 teams that held training camps away from their main practice facilities. Carolina Panthers. They've gone to Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina for every season going back to their inception as a club in the mid-90s. And so it's not anything more than an inconvenience. I don't know that it changes a whole lot. Maybe a few things here or there, but it seems smart. Redskins, Bills, Chiefs, Colts, Rams normally leave their main practice facilities. You do have teams that use their own facilities but then stay at hotels that are nearby. Who knows what goes on with the Raiders and their move to Las Vegas? They've still been working out of Oakland, so Alameda, Oakland area. Alameda is where they were hoping to have their training camp. No, wait a minute. Alameda is where their facilities are. Their training camp is Napa. Excuse me for getting those mixed up. At least I caught it. So they actually haven't left the Bay Area to get to Vegas yet. And so their move has been complicated, delayed. They are technically the Vegas Raiders now. But it's all thrown into flux. Still no coaches allowed at team facilities, but that is expected to be kind of the next phase. Also, ticket offices, retail shops, facilities that allow customers to come in, so that provide services to customers. As long as the local regulations and the state regulations allow those facilities to reopen, that's allowed to take place Monday for NFL teams. So it's happening. It's a bit of a melting of the iceberg, so to speak. And the NFL has the benefit of time. So most training camps don't open until late July, about the same time we would see the NHL and the NBA return. Oh, once we get to the end of July, and I don't know about you baseball, but once we get to the end of July, we are talking about every sport known to man all operating at the same time. You know what else is significant? There's a countdown going for the NFL and the countdown to the season that the league is still counting on will take place on schedule. Here's John Breach, reporter for CBS Sports HQ.
We are 100 days from the NFL season, but 100 days ago was February 23rd, and that now feels like it was three lifetimes ago. So something that is 100 days away actually feels like it's about 10 years away. Now, that being said, I would say that my optimism level is at about 70% that this season will go off as planned. I think the NFL has one big advantage. Obviously, they've had a lot of time to kind of plan out everything as far as coronavirus is concerned, but they're also going to be able to watch what the NBA does and watch what Major League Baseball does. And if those two sports restart, you kind of see what they do. And those are two sports that are going to be playing games every day, every other day, where the NFL only has to play games once a week. So that's a huge advantage that the league's going to have. Now, why am I not 100% confident that we're going to see an entire season? It's because, you know, we don't know a lot about this virus. There could be a second wave that happens in the fall. Anything could happen. What happens if Patrick Mahomes gets it? Do the Chiefs keep playing or with a backup quarterback? We don't know what's going to happen, what the protocols are going to be. If one player gets it, does the rest of the team get quarantined? So there's a lot of questions that remain unanswered. But I am about 70% sure we're going to see an entire season.
John Breach, CBS Sports HQ, thinks 70%. Oh, I would go higher than that, knowing anything about the NFL. And yes, it has the benefit of being able to watch what other sports do, but not that much. I mean, the NBA and the NHL are going into bubbles, essentially. So how does that help the NFL? Doesn't really. I mean, they can use maybe that philosophy and those ideas for each of their individual facilities. But it's not going to be a one or two city hub for the NFL. No, they're going to play in their own stadiums unless, and I don't think this is going to happen because initially the ideas were that New York, California, maybe the DC Metro would be areas where facilities were not reopened for sports teams, but that's not the case. Right. So the governors haven't even reopened their states completely. And I'll just use New York as an example. New York City is still not reopened. They're still in a shelter in place type of a situation where it's only essential business, as every other part of New York State has reopened, but not New York City. The governor has indicated that it'll likely happen sometime in mid-June. But the sports facilities are allowed back. All right. So they didn't want to lose the revenue. They didn't want to lose the business that would come with having their facilities reopen and their sports teams return. So that's no longer going to be a concern for the NFL. The stadiums that are around the country will all be available for use, barring some outbreak or flare up, which wouldn't just affect facilities. It would likely affect the operation of the sport as a whole. But we're not talking about having to move teams now. We're not going to see states and geographic locations or regions fork over or forfeit the opportunity for the revenue that comes with an NFL team operating in their place. Now, even if the rest of the population is not able to get back to life as we knew it, sports teams will still be able to operate. I mean, it's so transparent. It's all about the money. But, you know, various states and regions, cities don't want to lose that revenue. Even if there are no fans, you still have people who are using hotels, restaurants, the other services. You know, we just talked about employees going back to work for ticket offices and memorabilia shops and other places where customers may frequent. So having a sports team with its facilities even partly reopened brings business. And states don't want to miss out on that. So we're not talking anymore about having to transplant NFL teams. And so I do agree that there are lessons and potentially protocols that the NFL can model by watching other sports, but the other sports will be in hub situations where the NFL will be spread out like it always is. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence here on CBS Sports Radio. So camps have to be held at each individual practice facility when we get back to it this summer, and teams are not allowed to hold joint training camp practices, which means we won't have that storyline this summer. It always is a storyline. And you always have the fights that break out or the conversations about whether or not it's safe and yada, yada, yada. So it's going to look all different. And yet, of all the sports out there, the NFL may be still most closely sticking to its schedule and will resemble the norm, quote unquote, more than any other sport. the locker rooms in the NFL, that's the catalyst for the question on this edition of The Hump Show. And many of you have weighed in both on Twitter and Facebook. So Demario Davis, sub, as I did say to start the show, and Dave helped me out and confirmed, he was the last interview posted on our YouTube channel. So we don't have the ability right now to, because of the limited equipment access and time at CBS Sports Radio headquarters, one of the things that we are unable to do right now that we had to kind of shelf for the time being is using our YouTube channel and posting interviews and videos on our YouTube channel. But Demario Davis was of the Saints was the last interview that we posted going back to mid-February. And so it's there. And I was so impressed in my conversation with him and his thoughtful, candid answers about both personal and professional. And he was on the NFL Network on Tuesday echoing the sentiments of what we've heard from others around the football community, which is that a locker room gives you an example of communication and working together and guys not focusing on race or ethnicity or backgrounds or socioeconomic status, but putting all that aside for a common goal.
One thing you could say about NFL locker rooms, they're very diverse and everybody has a temperature to what's going on. And because of that diversity, everybody kind of generally understands what's going on and tries to work collaboratively to find solutions to what's going on. And we need that to be reflected in the rest of the world.
Part of Davis's conversation on the NFL Network is really good stuff. And once again, he doesn't hold back. He shares his thoughts from his wisdom, his experience, from his heart, from his background. So we'll have a little more of that. But the question that I'm asking you in light of his comments, what did you learn from being part of a team sport, being in a locker room, working with other people who in some cases were probably not like you? I know that was the case for me. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, a lot of you weighing in. So I'll get to your answers coming up here. 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. On Twitter, I posted the photo of poor Penny scrambling for cover, a few rumbles of thunder, and my amazing dog decides she has to hide under the bed. She looks like a frog, the way her legs are splayed out where she's trying to get under the bed. And the funny part is she gets halfway under and has to take a break. Like, it's so much effort to get under the bed because, she's a big dog. So she has to get flat down on her belly, kind of almost swim her way underneath the bed. So she stops and takes a break halfway through. So what's up when you're an old dog? And I'll post it on Facebook here when I have an opportunity.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Thanks so much for joining us on our Hump Show. Coming up next, your weekly edition of Ask Amy Anything. I'm not really sure why I sighed, or it sounded like I sighed. I wasn't really sighing. I was thinking, and that's what came out. Thinking and talking at the same time. Not as easy as I make it sound. We'll see what other suits follow sport. 855-212-4227. 855-212-4CBS. If you would like to see the picture of Penny's butt, it's a cute and fuzzy butt with her 2-inch tail. No, I'm not just sending you a picture of Penny's butt, though sometimes I do take photos just of her rump because after she goes to the groomers, her rump is all fluffy and she's so cute. Anyway, plus she's a prancer. Aussies are prancers. Anyway, she was scrambling for cover after she heard a few rumbles of thunder, which there were only 3 or 4 of them. And now I don't even hear any rain outside. I think it's fine. But she went scrambling for cover. And because she's older and because she's a 75-pound dog, getting underneath the bed does require a break, a rest period in the middle of the scramble. She cracks me up. I don't know what I would do without this dog. My life would be boring and not nearly, well, my life's still a little bit boring, but not nearly as fun, as humorous. She's got such a personality. And I know we talk about our pets a lot. So you always are asking me about Penny. check it out on our Facebook page. When you played sports, when you coached sports, what did you learn? In a team setting, in a team atmosphere, I feel like there's so many lessons that we can learn that can apply to the challenges and the obstacles that we're navigating as a nation this spring, whether it's the virus and finding ways to connect and communicate and work together for a common goal, even when we aren't together. I think that that's required some major creativity and insight, some courage, and some ability to jump in, dive into a new adventure. But also what we're going through right now in the wake of George Floyd's death and the peaceful protest, but also the violence. And I think I have been so impressed, and I've said this before, but just in the microcosm of teamwork, the lens of teamwork, how about the people who show up the morning after violence and looting and they help clean up and rebuild for small business owners or other members of the community that they may not even know personally? Those stories have been countless across the country, and they really warm my heart. So on Twitter, A-Law Radio, also on our Facebook page, because sports can teach us a lot, and I want to know what you learned from your time participating in sports. So I'm going to run through some of these on Facebook first. Paul says, baseball, I learned how to work with others. It taught me how each person's actions affected others. Oh, that's so true. In a team, in a family, everything you do impacts other people. You don't operate in a vacuum. Everything you do has the potential to be positive or negative on all the other members of that team. Steve says on Facebook, I learned when I was younger, the coaches always told the teams, no matter how good or bad you are, that you're always an important part of the team. Yeah, that's something I wrote down, actually, as I was taking my notes in answer to this question. And I started playing organized team sports as a third grader in Little League. I'm sure I have that photo somewhere. No, I'm not planning on sharing it with you, at least not now. Although I think my hair looked better then than it does now. It was poking out underneath my hat that was pulled down over my ears. I can remember the photo. My red and gray uniform. I was so proud. Not everybody has the same role on a team. You can't all be superstars. You can't all be starters. Not everybody plays the same role, has the same responsibilities. And yet every single part and role on a team must be fulfilled or the team isn't going to be successful. Even the managers who get the water or who bring the warm-up jerseys or who collect the warm-up jerseys so that someone doesn't trip coming off the court. The coaches, their various responsibilities, whether it's scouting, whether it's X's and O's in a huddle. And of course, the team itself. I mean, you could talk about various positions. That's a simplistic way to look at it. But starter versus reserve. Maybe the guy who works his rear off in practice to push the starters so that they're tested and ready to go. Maybe it's the closer, the finisher, and not the starters if you're looking at a baseball type format. Punters and kickers, what do I tell you all the time? Kickers are people too. If they do their role poorly, well, don't we all scream about it? Absolutely. It's the concept of you are only as strong as your weakest link. Also on Facebook, Sherry wants to know if cheerleading counts as a team sport. Of course it does. She said we learn to count on each other, especially if you're on the top of the pyramid. Teamwork, hard work. We practiced in sun and rain every day for several hours. I cherish those years. Yeah, the hard work, dedication is something else I learned from being part of a team sport. Dedication and perseverance, not giving up. And very often when you want to give up, you can find inspiration from those around you who won't let you give up. Trust even when you don't necessarily feel it. In order to gain trust, you have to give trust. Jeremy on Facebook, accountability, integrity, learning to depend on each other, learning to take a failure and make it a success by learning from it. Amazing. Community pride, fundraising for a good cause, so many more lessons learned. Justin on Facebook, TEAM as an acronym. Together, everybody achieves more. Another post. I learned everything from youth sports, football, basketball, baseball, working hard, dedication, teamwork, self-discipline. Oh, discipline is huge. It's huge. If you don't practice, if you don't work on your craft, well, you're going to be the weakest link. Kelly on Facebook, it teaches the meaning of teamwork. Winning together, losing together, relying and depending on each other as one. It also builds character. Losing teaches you how to get back up, work harder, come back better, and win. Never give up and keep trying. All can and should be translated in life skills, not just the game. And that's the point I'm making. These are life skills we're learning, not just something that will help us to be better as a team, to help us to win some hardware. Many of you are pointing to sportsmanship. Well, what's sportsmanship? Respect, right? Respect. Can we respect our opponents even when they kick our rears? Can we respect people who are different than us, who do things differently than us? Communication. How important is communication on the basketball court or the football field? Think of the offensive line on the football field. Sometimes the communication is nonverbal. It's cues. It's knowing the man to your left and your right so well by virtue of the number of reps. I mean, it's amazing the things we can learn from playing team sports that also apply and can be applied to problem solving in the rest of life. One more on Facebook. Pauline says they teach you to work as a team and to trust each other. Thank you so much for these posts. On our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence, Penny's Butt is also now on the Facebook page. Just check it out. You'll understand. And on Twitter, I'll get to some of your reactions there coming up. A-Law Radio, if you want to send a last few questions to our show Twitter or Facebook page for Ask Amy Anything, that is straight ahead. We're glad to have you on board for the Hump Show, and I always appreciate that you send your responses to our show questions too. We stretch you, we make you think, or I hope that we do.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Thank you so much for all of your responses to our questions this week, every week. I don't always agree with your responses, although this is a fairly mild type of a question, not super controversial. But I like that we can share our various opinions, and we don't need to agree. And that's kind of a simple way to look at what's happening right now, the communication and also racism, discrimination, prejudice. Sometimes it's based in the fact that we don't understand or we're not familiar with. We're afraid of things that are different than us. But it really doesn't need to be that way. If you recognize that what makes us different makes us stronger, makes us better, makes us, I think, more beautiful. But, you know, I digress and I get on my soapbox. Thanks again for your questions for Ask Amy Anything, and we're going to hand the microphone, at least one of them, because there are two, over to Dave for this part of the Hump Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, so we will start with Tim, who wants to know, how often do you visit Wisconsin? He says his grandma lives there. She's turning 103, and he tries to go once a year from New Jersey.
Oh, that's awesome. Yes, I make the trek once a year. I don't yet have my plane ticket. Normally, I would by now, but Grammy Helen, who's 98, is still under lockdown. So no visitors into her assisted living facility at all yet, even though she's been tested for COVID-19 twice. And in Wisconsin, they're moving toward reopening with restrictions and limitations, but allowing the residents to have visitors. And you know what? At her facility, I am so grateful that they have advocates who understand there has to be balance. Yes, it's tragic what has happened in our nursing homes and assisted living facilities to so many elderly people around the country. I think the number I heard was nearly 30,000 people in nursing homes have been victims of COVID-19, which is, I mean, that's a huge percentage of the overall number. So I'm glad my Grammy is safe, but I also can't wait to see her. And I'll go through any precaution or any test that I need to be able to visit with her, with Grammy Helen. She's excited about spring, and she is excited about my house. And I call her once a week, but I only get to Wisconsin once a year. Except for when the Super Bowl was in Minneapolis, I was there in the dead of winter. It was minus 17 as I was driving from Minneapolis to her place in central Wisconsin at that point. So as soon as I can get a plane ticket, I'm hoping for July to be able to visit her. But Tim, that's awesome about your grandmother. I'm praying that mine also survives to 103, though she tells me that makes her tired to think about that.
All right, so we'll move on to Jeff. He wants to know what your first ever car was, and also, what is your dream car?
That's a good question. My first three cars, actually, were all Nissan Sentras. Vinyl seats, no air condition, incredible gas mileage, but the kind of car that's really a tin can. The first one was the one all three were stick shifts. And I learned to drive on the first one that was our family car after, it was just my mom, my brother, and me in high school. And my mom made me learn how to drive that Nissan Sentra with its front wheel drive in snow before she would let me get my New Hampshire license. And then I went away to college and that car eventually died. We got another Nissan Sentra. That one, my fault. This is one of my greatest regrets in life is that this is how I learned the hard way that you must check your oil and get oil changes, because I seized the engine on that one. It was still a good running car and would have run for a while. So then we got another Nissan Sentra, all gray too, gray silver, crazy enough. But that was how I learned to drive and how I learned to make mistakes and how I broke down and learned how to fix tires and all that jazz. First three cars, Nissan Sentra. My dream car. You know, it's funny, when I was younger, it was a Lamborghini, but how impractical and undreamy is that now? I would never want a Lamborghini. I just liked it from Cannonball Run, one of the first adult movies my mom let me watch. I like a Lexus. I think some of the Lexus are smooth. And so I do think that that would be kind of a cool way to, I don't know, to get your dream car. But who knows? Right now, I've got my dream house, a house becoming a dream. So there'll be no new cars anytime soon. Princess Leia, she and I are sticking together for a while.
Well, then we move on to Michelle, who wants to know about the new house. And also Penny, what do you think Penny will enjoy most about your new house?
Fenced in backyard. I will be able to let her outside in all temperatures. She loves to be outside in the cold. She likes to sit outside for hours and sniff and just hang out. Sometimes she gets anxious at night. She doesn't like noise. So if I watch TV, she can get a little panty and anxious. And sitting outside on my driveway, it just calms her down. It just makes her so happy to sit outside. Now, she doesn't generally go anywhere without me, so I don't worry too much. I can let her sit out there for 10 minutes and check on her, every 10 minutes, and she's fine. She stays when I tell her to stay. But to be able to put her outside in the green grass and the cool grass and let her just lay out there as long as she wants in the snow, whatever, she's going to love that. She's going to live out her senior years in the backyard of the new house, I'm sure. The house is... It's weird to own a house and not be living in it. I'm not there yet. The furniture won't be moved for a couple of weeks, so I still have three of my four moving Saturdays, but I'm making good progress. I'll tell you what, the house is starting to look, somewhat empty and weird, the one that I'm living in now, and I'm piling up boxes in the various rooms in the new house.
So we have another house question. Eric wants to know, what's one unexpected thing you've learned throughout the process of buying and now moving into a new house?
Well, the bank can request any piece of information it wants on you and can ask you to repeat that information six ways to Sunday. So, I felt like I'd been stripped clean. with the bank process and the mortgage, because the paperwork and the stubs and the statements, and there was no privacy. All my privacy is gone. Not just that, but my family's in many cases. Uh-oh, I have to sneeze. They wanted to know when I sneezed, for heaven's sakes. So that process was invasive, but it's important. That was one thing I learned. But also, it's a lot more money than what you think, than the numbers you see on the piece of paper, because I already had to change the locks. I mean, the locks were ancient. The couple that owned the home owned it for 40 years. And so the locks were discolored. There were no deadbolts. So I had to replace the locks the first week and put in new ones. Yep, there goes $500 more. Just like that. There's all these costs that you don't really think about. And now I'm about to put in central AC, which it's one thing that Penny and I cannot live without. Oh, that and a dishwasher. But we're going to put in central AC, and I've done three estimates, and my mom and my mom's husband and I are kind of talking about all the options. They help me figure things out. But there's all this money that you never anticipated spending right off the top, you know? So it's expensive. That's what I've learned about buying a house, and I'm having to, you know, to make cuts in other parts of my budget and be really careful about my spending the rest of the year. But I do think it's all worth it, Dave.
All right, so we'll circle back to kind of the question of the night. Sandy wants to know, what clubs and sports did you participate in high school and throughout your education?
Well, in high school, you could name it, and I was part of it. There wasn't anything I didn't participate in. Student council, yearbook. I was part of, choir. I played piano. What sports did I play in school? I ran cross country. I played basketball. I played softball. Actually, I was on my varsity softball team from the time I was a seventh grader. And then I also played volleyball my last year. And so I did four different sports. I ran track as well one or two years when I was in high school. Most of that was to keep me in shape for basketball, because I knew that's what I wanted to do when I got to college, where I played basketball. And in terms of activities, you know, being part of different clubs and some professional clubs, when I was in college, I did both communications as well as accounting as my undergrad degrees. I won a speech contest when I was in high school, a state speech contest. That was pretty cool. So the preparation that went into that. So in high school, I was one of those people that did everything, just loved it. And in college, you know, you're a little more limited based on the number of credits you're taking and degrees you're carrying, but I still managed to get a good mix. So, those were good days. They were good days, but I wouldn't go back to them for all the money in the world, because now your homework actually has to do with your career and not just writing random papers. I tell young people that I mentor all the time, this homework you do now is preparation for your career, because you learn how to do homework, you learn how to research, you learn how to prepare.
All right, so Dan wants to know, what's the best advice you've ever received, and who was it from?
This is a story that I tell. In fact, I've written a blog post about it. I'll give you the short version. When I was working in Oklahoma, I just made the jump to full-time sports, so this early 2000s, and I got fired. It was the first time I ever getting fired. It was my year evaluation. I went in with a proposal for a raise and kind of my thoughts on the first year. And before I could get any words out of my mouth, the boss fired me. It was the quickest meeting in the history of employment meetings. And I was stunned. I was halfway across the country. I was broke, of course, because you don't make any money working in radio, especially in the smaller markets. I had no idea what to do. And I was terrified. I wondered if my career was over, if that was the end for me. And there was one man in the market. This was 15 years ago-ish. Most of the people I worked with in the Oklahoma market, competing stations, other men at my station, wanted nothing to do with me. They didn't help me. They didn't offer assistance. They, you know, instead treated me like I was a fungus. And so there weren't very many friends in that market. But there was one man who was a TV sports director. He was actually a generational guy from a generational family. His dad, Bob Berry Sr., was the longtime voice of the Oklahoma men's basketball team and football team. And then Bob Jr. was his son, who was the sports director for one of the local TV stations. And Bob had taken me under his wing. He'd really defended me, but also tried to teach me. And I mean, I was all new place in Oklahoma and was learning as I went. So that day when I got fired, I called him blubbering. I mean, I was probably crying so hard that I could barely get the words out, but he was the only one I could think of in the market to call. And he said something to me that I'll never forget. And I know he meant it to be humorous, but it was also a great piece of advice. Amy, you haven't made it in this business until you've been fired at least twice, meaning it's just a setback. You've got a long way to go. It's going to happen because this business is volatile and this industry is unstable. You've got one under your belt. Get fired again, and then you know you finally made it somewhere in your career. And so he was very encouraging, and he passed away in a car accident 5 years ago, actually, and still miss him. We were in touch up until the weeks before he died, and I still have his tweets, and I still have his text messages, and I miss him dearly. But that piece of advice I share with everybody: you haven't made it in this business until you've been fired at least twice. As in, failure is not the end of the road. Thanks, Bob.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend? Or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.